COVID-19 destroyed your child's school year, but you don't have to let it destroy your child's summer. Introducing Camp Zoom.
Camp Zoom!
The world's first 24-hour virtual summer camp for boys and girls of all ages, located right on your computer.
Camp Zoom!
Archery, canoeing, softball, horseback riding are all available to chat about.
Camp Zoom!
Camp Zoomers get to spend the day indoors, imagining what might have been, and forming new friendships, unless the Wi-Fi cuts out.
Camp Zoom!
Here's 13-year-old Camp Zoomer Jay.
We pretended we were swimming in a lake.
Camp Zoom!
Summer's here. A lifetime of camp memories is just a download away.
Camp Zoom!
You are listening to Questionable Material with Jack Helmuth and Brian Sack. This episode, Kim Jong-un is definitely alive. Alien versus Predator versus Muppets. A different streaming service. Good morning.
Or afternoon. Or evening.
Doesn't matter.
Time is the same. Days are the same. It just doesn't matter at all.
If I could put time in a bottle, this is what I'd like to do.
I'd smash the bottle, and then I'd escape and cut my own wrists. It's got to end, man. And I'll tell you what, the thing I'm finding, we have this weekly thing where we play a game with our friends.
Oh, you turned me on to that, and I'm so grateful.
Oh, that's so awesome. I want to hear about that. So it's this Jackbox game.
Yeah.
So we have the standing Saturday night date with our friend, our very dear friends. And it's so wonderful to connect with them, just to sort of have them in our house, just even if it's on a computer screen. But man, you realize if it's someone that you speak to on a somewhat regular basis, there's nothing else to say anymore.
Yeah.
Like, hey, what's up? The same.
Right.
The same thing that was up last week.
Not true.
Okay, go ahead. Why?
I killed a bunch of hornets.
Did you?
I found a turtle.
Were the two related?
I hope not, because the hornets are all dead. I hope the turtle didn't have feelings for them.
What do you think that relationship could have possibly been?
That's probably one of those weird, they would have called the turtle like a species traitor. But
that makes sense.
Really connecting with the chipmunks. There's one who will let me touch him now.
Really?
So I'm petting the little chipmunk as he's eating peanuts. They like peanuts.
And that's a red flag, folks.
And I thought, well, maybe I'll create like a little restaurant or bar scene that I can then feed the peanuts at. That would be kind of hilarious.
Oh, that's really funny.
I design like a little set for the chipmunks. And then my wife's like, if you do that, I'll leave you. So I got to weigh out the pros and cons.
Yeah, it's a tough one. That's a real Sophie's choice.
It could be very funny. Chipmunk at a bar that says like, you know, O'Callaghan's.
But then there's no more, you know, there's no more monthly sex and no more meals every day.
Right. No more daily sex. I understand. But I would Tinder. I'd probably sign up for Tinder.
Yeah. And that would just take care of that.
Yeah. Be like, hey, swipeity, swipeity, which is what they do.
Sure, sure, sure. And then people are going to come over in the heart of quarantine just to have casual sex with an old man.
You never know. They might.
They might. They really might.
Hope springs eternal.
So what are you going to do with this whole chipmunk versus wife problem?
I need to just do a lot of thinking and figure, okay, yeah. I've got like at least five or six adorable chipmunks who rely on me for peanuts.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a wife, you know,
who relies on you for what?
She needs me to entertain her. You know, mm-hmm. I provide entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
I set out her coffee cup at night. And
right.
Prepare everything so she can have coffee in the morning.
I mean, my God, without you, she'd have to reach up into a cabinet and get her own cup.
Yeah. And I don't know if I told you, but she's been working on being immobile, you know, eating herself into immobility.
Oh, you have not told me that.
It's a thing. Have you heard about that?
No.
No, there are people, it's a psychological thing. There are people, usually women, who want to eat themselves into immobility so that they have to be taken care of on a constant basis.
Really?
Yeah, it's a thing.
I can't imagine you and your wife would be okay with that.
No, I'm just kidding. But it was something I had read about, and I was like, why? That's got to be some kind of weird psychological issue you have.
to want to not be able to move.
That's a strange one. Like for me, I don't have any weird ones. And I just have I like to, harm my family. So I'll get sympathy from, friends and neighbors.
Munchausen. Munchausen by proxy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I hate to put a name on it, but yeah. So, but I don't have anything weird like that.
Yeah.
Like I want to be mobile. I want to be an active guy. I want to hurt my family and then hop on the treadmill.
Yeah,
and,
no, totally.
And look good for the sympathy I'm going to get. All right. So this wasp hornet thing. So you killed a bunch of, was it wasps or hornets?
Hornets. So I sprayed them with my spray that shoots like 20 feet. And then I just ran after.
So you just, so walk us through the process of killing a giant group of hornets.
Well, I had a flashlight so I could get up and see inside the little roof where they were in the shed. And then I lit them up with a flashlight and they were just kind of sitting there. And then I shook the spray, got it ready. I aimed it and then just shot it and just did it's like 3 or 4 seconds of just steady spray until they started to figure out what was going on. Then right. They'd be like, kill the human, kill the human. So then I jumped off the ladder and bolted.
Did you hear that rallying cry?
I Usain bolted.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I beat his record.
No kidding.
Yeah, getting away
so
from
So you
hornets.
Identified as Usain Bolt and were able to run really fast.
I identified as Usain Bolt and I got out of there. And then I went back and they were mostly dead.
Did you hear, now what does mostly dead mean?
There were a couple that were still kind of, when I went back like a day later, there were still a few that were kind of clearly not at 100% because they were on the ground and just kind of, walking in circles and doing, and I just felt really bad. So I sent them to heaven. I sent them to heaven with a tamper. That's a big pole with a heavy metal bottom that you use to crush, push gravel down and tamp things down. Mm-hmm. And I just held it up above them and I said, sorry guys. And then just dropped it.
Wow.
Quick and painless.
What do you think they were thinking for that day where they were just walking around in circles, sort of like probably kind of like Joe Biden does most days?
Right. I knew this was too good to be true. I knew this was too good to be true. This perfect location. I knew somebody human was going to come ruin it.
Do you think this is like their coronavirus? Do you think there is a hornet Governor Cuomo out there just like, giving them hornet press conferences, being like, look, this will pass.
Yeah. Yeah, they were probably like, oh, we saw this human here 2 months ago. We probably should have done something about him then. And we didn't. And, we're paying the price now, but we're going to bounce back. Excelsior.
Now, do you worry that there's going to be some sort of revenge plan hatched by the Hornets?
Not currently, because they don't seem to be faring too well. I believe they're all in Hornet Heaven.
What would Hornet Heaven be like?
Hell.
No, but for hornets, that would be hell for you and me.
I guess
for a hornet.
Lots of people to sting.
Uh-huh. Lots of slow kids.
Slow kids that they can just sting for no reason. Hornets are mean. See, I remember my mom got stung by a hornet once. My wife got stung by a hornet. And that made me feel guilty because I'd kind of seen them building a little nest in this weird space. And I thought I should take care of that. And then a couple weeks later, she was reaching for something like, bang, they got her.
So did you admit that you had seen it before and then she would yell at you, or did you just silently note, well, I should have done something?
I silently noted that I should have done something.
So if she listens to this podcast, this will be the first time she realizes that Brian knew about the hornets and just was too lazy to do anything about it.
That is a possibility. Yeah, I was reading an article this morning. A lot of streaming has really suffered.
And you put all your money into streaming services, right?
Yeah, I did. But it's like a Golden Showers LLC, which is not what the kind of streaming I had believed it would be.
Oh gosh, that's a real different.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't do my research. Usually I do my due diligence before I invest in a stock. This, it said streaming service, Golden Showers LLC. I'm like, I got in on the IPPO. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. I mean, again, if you're just sloppily reading, your brain reads IPO.
Yeah.
It knows what it's trying to say, but that extra P is all the difference.
When I went back and reread everything, it was IPPO. And then I was like, oh my God. So yeah, heavily invested in that.
Well, so how's that business doing? Because I understand streaming music. Maybe this accident, this sloppiness on your part, sort of the not getting the hornet's nest of investing, has maybe saved your family.
No, because if you think about it, there's with the shutdown of everything, there's not a lot of business travel going on.
Right.
And that's usually when you hire people to make pee-pees on you. Right. You're on a business trip, you're in a hotel, different city. Right. And you know, you want someone to urinate on you, and that's not happening.
I mean, it seems to me that, I mean, if you really want that bad enough, you could just go outside and in a few minutes you could have someone peeing on you.
I tried that. And so far, all I got myself was a cease and desist from the neighbors, a threat from the guy across the street who like, he whips out a shotgun the minute he sees me.
Oh my gosh.
Just brandishes it. So clearly nobody's, you know, from a different mindset in the country. City life is different.
I guess so. Wow. Boy. So how would a streaming business like that work? Because it's, you know, you forget that it's a one-on-one or at least an in-person. I don't want to put a limit on the number of people involved, but it's a, so what's that sort of business model like?
Well, it's a subsidiary of the bottled water industry.
No kidding. Dasani's in on this?
Dasani's in on it. So the idea is you drink a lot of water of Dasani which is tap water that's run through a filter. Now you could do that yourself with a Brita or, you know, under the sink filter, or you can pay money for Coca-Cola to put filtered water in a plastic bottle and buy it.
Right.
And then name your kid after it.
Okay. All right. So they're in on this.
Yeah. Big water.
Okay. So again, big water, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So how do you set up this? How did you set up your business?
Well, I just invested in it, but their business model,
like, is there overhead?
They'll do it overhead, you know, any way you want to.
No, I guess I'm sorry. I guess I meant more in the, is there overhead like in a business type of play?
Oh,
like,
I see what you're saying.
Are there expenses? You understand?
Yeah. I mean, really, you know, the expense is water and travel. You drink a lot of water and then you have to go, you have to travel to wherever your client is.
Man. Okay. So it's, and that's usually the business traveler.
Yeah.
So I guess a lot of this is done in hotels.
Yeah. Used to be back when the hotels were a thing.
Right. Man, you know, you don't think of the little guys like this, the entrepreneurs in situations like, you know, these economic shutdowns.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a ripple effect. I mean, you don't have the Golden Showers rep doing their job. And that means, you know, housekeeping doesn't have a job to do when they leave.
That's right.
You don't have a completely soiled bed and rug. So, you know, you take that off this. And now the housekeeper, you know, they reduced the number of housekeepers they need.
Right.
Room service, if they're not drinking all that water. Then you cut back on room service. It's just it's a cascading, it's a trickle down.
Yeah, I guess it would be a trickle down. So Brian, so my question is this, how does, you must have done enough research in the business once you accidentally invested heavily in the pee industry. How does this?
It's by the way, it's urine technology. They don't call it the pee industry.
Oh, I apologize.
That's fine.
So how do urine technologists,
UTech,
how do people in the UTech business find jobs? How do you find a good UTech representative?
Well, I mean, you're always looking for somebody who has the professional appearance of somebody who's in the UTech business, usually female, although there's plenty of room for males.
Great.
Ideally you have somebody who has a tremendous bladder. And what they do is they have recruitment fairs. And what they do is they'll have a ballroom. It's an open bar. Okay. And everybody comes in and it's an open bar for the first 2.5 hours.
Wow.
And then they just lock the doors and they wait and see. And then there are no bathrooms and you wait and you see, and whoever lasts basically has a job.
Now I'm confused because a layman like me, who's not in UTech, would think that you don't necessarily want someone to last. You want someone who is able to quickly take the liquids and immediately change them into urine. So I would think maybe you want someone with a small bladder, but maybe I'm just an incompetent.
Well, that's the first. There are two screens. So the first is the bladder size. Mm-hmm. It's the BSS. It's the bladder size screen. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first event. You have the open bar. You determine out of, say 500 people, your top 100 bladders. Because the people who let go are let go.
Okay, go on.
And so then you have the other 100 people. And you give them, you wait a week and you have another screening. And this time it's the bladder conversion process, the BCP. And we're trying to determine who in this group of 100 is going to convert liquids quickly. Because mm-hmm. that is what you want. You want somebody who turns around, who can drink a bottle of Dasani and within 5-10 minutes be performing UTEC on a customer.
Now, that's great. That makes sense. What happens to the ones who aren't able to do that? What'll get you immediately disqualified?
In every 10 minutes, they blow a whistle and everybody lines up at the trough. Mm-hmm. And then they say, go. Right. And then they just run down the line and whoever can go, goes. And they immediately are given a green card.
Uh-huh.
Which allows them to move on.
I'm surprised it's not a yellow card.
Yeah, me too. That would have been better. I'll tell the board.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess the people who are not able to perform mm-hmm. get a green card.
I see.
The people who are able to perform get a yellow card.
And in that industry, in the UTEC industry, yellow means go.
Yeah, it's the opposite of soccer.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
And in this, you can use your hands.
You can use your hands, yes. Although both have messy things. I know soccer.
It's amazing that we found the one soccer reference you could make, and it's perfect. Oh my gosh. Okay. And hotels rent out their ballroom spaces to the UTEC conferences?
Why do you think it's called a ballroom?
I haven't thought about it, I guess.
That's the problem. People don't think.
I guess it says the guy who accidentally invested in the pee-pee industry.
Yeah, well, fingers and streams crossed. It could be big. I mean, this could be a breakthrough stock or a leak-through stock. Gak.
Jack.
Yes.
Jack.
Yes, that's what I said.
Guess. Yes, tell me.
Guess what I have.
Oh my God! Is it HIV?
No, I cleared that out by drinking bleach.
What do you have? I can't possibly imagine what you can have. There's nothing else you can have.
This is what happens, Jack. Everybody's so focused on the quarantine and Donald Trump that there's news that falls through the cracks that you don't hear about.
I guess you're going to have to prove it to me because I remain a skeptic.
Are you ready to hear the news that you missed this week?
I'm ready. I'm intrigued.
All right. Say go music.
Go music. Wow, that was neat.
Jack, the Biden campaign announced that they'd come up with a clever and devastating new nickname for President Trump and hope that the new moniker will destroy the self-esteem and possibly even the will to live of the 73-year-old incumbent. It's true. The vice president's nicknaming committee, comprised of 37 people of all races, genders, and ethnicities, except Pacific Islander, spent the last 4 months putting together a short list of nicknames to take on and defeat President Trump. The importance of a clever and insulting nickname was made evident in 2016 when then-candidate Trump derailed the presidential aspirations of all his opponents with vicious nicknames that any fifth-grade recess bully would have been proud of. Taking a page from the Trump playbook, Biden created his nicknaming committee and tasked them with developing what they hope will be a cataclysmic moniker. In an informal press conference held on Tuesday, Vice President Biden announced that going forward, he would, quote, only refer to my opponent as a snollygoster. May God have mercy on his soul, end quote.
What? A snollygoster.
A snollygoster. It's going to sting.
Is that an actual word or is that just something that Joe made up?
It's an actual word and it's going to sting like a hornet. Snollygoster, Jack.
Is there a definition?
Popularized in the 1890s by Georgia politician Colonel H.J.W. Ham. The term goes back at least a half decade more than that, which is a fancy way of saying 5 years. An Ohio newspaper defined it as a fellow who wants office regardless of party, platform, or principles, and who, whenever he wins, gets there by the sheer force of monumental tocnophical assumnancy. Yeah.
Man, way to go, Joe.
Good for you, Joe. He did it. He came up with the killer insult.
He really did. Good one. Zing. Well, I guess that's it. That must be all the news that I missed.
I knew you were going to say that. It's so aggravating to me that you would say that. And because it's not true, Jack. Jack, have you heard of Kim Jong-un?
Yeah, I've read a newspaper in the last 10 years.
Well, he's very much alive. And if you disagree, Jack, you are a bad person. After disappearing from public view for a long stretch and even missing an important holiday, rumors began to circulate that the notoriously secretive North Korean government was actually hiding the death of the 36, 37, or 38-year-old leader. However, North Korean state media has vociferously insisted that Kim Jong-un is alive, and in fact, more alive than most people because he's so very, very much alive. State newspaper, the Kim Jong-un is Alive Times, released a photo of the leader using binoculars with the caption saying that dead people could not use binoculars, so obviously the leader is alive. The most recent episode of popular North Korean TV show The Great and Glorious Masked Singer featured someone in a panda costume singing the hit song Our Great Leader is Alive, That is for Certain. And although the singer was never unmasked, the show hosts insisted on pain of death that the voice they heard was none other than the incredibly alive leader of the country, Kim Jong-un. Also, state media reported a triple rainbow near Mount Paktu, which is known to be a divine sign that the country's infallible and selfless leader is definitely not dead. You have to believe me.
Wow, it's... And where did that, is there a source to that story?
It's the Democratic People's Republic of Korea News, Jack.
Okay. Well, I mean, they would know best, I guess. I guess you have to trust that.
You have to trust what they tell you. Who else are you going to believe?
Triple rainbow, you said.
Triple rainbow. Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing. That's a lot of rainbows.
Must have happened.
It must have happened. Okay. Wow, Brian, that's a crazy story, and I guess thank you for news you missed.
I want you to listen to something, Jack.
Okay.
And I think that's going to suggest to you that that's not all the news you missed. You ready?
Okay.
There you go.
Boy, that music, yeah. The guy in the music van wouldn't have played the music if there wasn't more.
An Elmsford Lake woman continues to let everyone know that she had coronavirus some 6 weeks after her recovery. Jeanette Wiley has taken to social media no fewer than 23 times to make sure that Instagram and Facebook friends were aware that she'd had the illness that millions of other people have had. On Friday, the 47-year-old announced that she was, quote, in solidarity with other survivors, end quote, and, quote, glad to be alive, along with other eye-rolling exclamations that someone desperate for attention would say. Sources say that friends and relatives are somewhat embarrassed for her, but wouldn't dare say anything because it's delightful entertainment when under quarantine.
Yeah, you do need to sort of mock the dummy. That's an important thing that we need to regain in quarantine.
Knock, knock.
Oh, who's there? Oh, I get it. It's more news I missed.
That's right. That's right, Jack. That's who's there. In other social media news, Cameron Howard of Amarillo, Texas, went on an Instagram spree on Wednesday, liking some 83 photos, most of which he barely even looked at. The 24-year-old tennis coach said that he routinely performs what he calls the, quote, like it and leave it maneuver in an effort to maintain engagement with the 892 people he follows. Howard told Reuters that he does so in the hopes that people, most of whom he doesn't know, would feel that he was actually interested in their endless photographs of lunch, pets, flowers, or purportedly artistic shots. Psychologists say that the like it and leave it method is actually quite common, and that of the 112 people who liked Howard's last post of a lone tennis ball, not one gave an actual shit.
Boy, their journalistic standards for decency have really fallen on the wayside during quarantine.
Yeah, I think, you know, this is what happens when everybody works at home. Speaking of work at home, I was on the phone with a bank rep.
Okay.
And her kid was crying in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Her kid's crying in the background. And then I finished the conversation. I go, okay, thanks very much. And then I just hear like, fuck my life. And then as she said that, I said, oh, don't say that. And then I heard silence. And then I got an email about, you know, shortly afterwards, you know, I'm so sorry. I beg your forgiveness, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I responded, I said, it was very funny. Don't worry about it. It was not, I was not upset at all.
That's fantastic.
Yep. Cause you know, I'm sure she's just under total stress. She's got the baby in the background and she's just, you know, everything's falling apart. And then she, you know, cursing and not aware that I could still hear her.
I think it's very possible that she's saying, fuck my life, that I have to deal with him, and wasn't even aware that her baby was crying.
Hadn't even thought of that.
Yep. It's something you're going to want to reconsider. Hey, Brian.
Yeah, Jackaroo. Is that too enthusiastic? Is that weird? It throws you off.
The enthusiasm, the weirdness is off the charts.
Yeah.
The enthusiasm, I don't mind enthusiasm. I could use some of that in my life.
It makes you feel uncomfortable when I say Jackaroo.
Yeah, it's just unwarranted. Like, we're not at that level.
All right, let's try it again.
Okay. Hey, Brian.
Get her done.
All right, that's the one code in comedies. You just can't steal other people's bits.
All right, fine.
Just try it again. You ready?
Yeah.
So, hey, Brian.
I was just following orders.
All right, that'll work. That makes sense. That tracks. So, Brian, and I know we've covered in the past on this show what a prolific screenwriter you are.
Yes, I am a prolific screenwriter.
Your most recent screenplays that you have written, and I was wondering if maybe we could go through some of them and you could tell us what the screenplay is about, what happens in the movie, who the characters are, just the whole nine yards, sort of pitches your screenplays that you've written, that you yourself have written.
You know, I would love to pitch the screenplays that I've written that are in my hard drive of scripts.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm prolific. I'm a script writing machine is what my friends call me.
So I see that you wrote a screenplay called Fast and Furious 10 Traffic Court. What is that movie about? It doesn't sound good.
Well, it's a sequel to the Fast and Furious franchise, of course.
Of course.
Every year there's one or two Fast and Furious movies that are put out.
Yeah. Yep.
And one thing occurred to me when I was watching the last nine, and it was, we always see them driving fast and racing and breaking laws. But, you know, I'm the guy in the theater who's always standing up going, where are the repercussions? Where are the repercussions? And then I'll turn around and I'll face the audience in the middle of the film and say, we want repercussions. We want repercussions. And that's how I lost two teeth.
I've been meaning to ask you about that for all the things we talk about.
Yeah. So I decided I was going to write the repercussions episode. I was going to write the film that had the repercussions in it. I want people to know that when you drive like a maniac and you break the rules of the road, there is a price to be paid. So the movie starts and ends in traffic court.
Okay, go on.
And I was inspired by The Irishman. So it's 3 hours and 48 minutes long.
Okay.
And really, it's based on my having observed traffic court. So I just sat there and I took notes. It's almost like it wrote itself. But then what I did was, you know, the old lady who got a ticket, I changed it to Vin Diesel. Mm-hmm. And just, and the various other characters. And I tried to create a lot of conflict. So at some point, the bailiff falls asleep and everybody's looking at the bailiff and he's asleep and nobody knows what to do. I thought that would kind of ratchet up the tension, as we say in show business. And there's a bit of an arc, you know, it's like there's, you know, people waiting for their turn to get it. You see other people getting tickets and things and some people having their tickets thrown out. And then, of course, the main character comes up and he gets his ticket. And then somebody else, you know, fights their ticket and claims that they weren't in the car because a photo ticket. And they say, you can't prove that I was in the car. And it's just, you know, there's a little drama there for about 10 to 12 seconds until the judge overrules him. So that's my Fast and Furious 10.
Well, it doesn't sound good. I'm going to be honest with you. Can you tell us that Vin Diesel storyline where you just basically swapped out the old lady and her traffic fine and made it Vin Diesel? Like, I want to see if it feels Vin Diesel-y.
Sure. So the storyline is Vin Diesel was on blood pressure medication. And just kind of blacked out a little bit and rear-ended the car she was parked behind. He was parked behind.
Okay.
And then was cited for damaging the car.
Okay.
It's pretty dramatic. A lot of it's going to rely on Vin Diesel's acting ability to really convey, you know, the drama behind getting a ticket for rear-ending somebody.
Well, okay. Well, thank you for sharing the movie. It doesn't sound like you'd be a lot of fun to go see a movie with. Would be my other takeaway from this.
Well, only when there are no repercussions.
Can you blow some air through your front, the gap in your teeth? Let me just see. Hear what that sounds like.
Give me a sentence to say.
Okay. So take out your falsies. And the snake slithered out and attacked me.
The snake slithered out and attacked me. See, that makes a huge difference when I take the teeth out.
A huge difference. Your two teeth apparently act as some sort of microphone filter that keep you from sounding like Bill Cosby on his deathbed. Wow. Technology, Doctor. Man. Well, good luck with that movie. It sounds awful. Cut it down would be my note.
I will consider it.
Try getting down to 3 hours and 20 minutes.
I'll see what I can do.
So this is interesting. I found a screenplay, incredibly long screenplay, on your laptop, just called The Parent Trap.
Yeah.
So it appears as if you're just remaking The Parent Trap, but for the modern era. So tell us about your Parent Trap remake.
Well, so this is inspired by the fact that my mother was an extra in the original Parent Trap.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so I thought it'd be like a nice homage to her. And I know they remade it with that Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah.
Fairly recently.
Yeah.
And I thought it was time for a new Parent Trap, but I wanted a little twist. I was inspired a little bit by Saw.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's set in a bedroom community. Mm-hmm. And there are these two kids and they want new parents. They're tired of the mom and dad that they have. They want new parents. And so what they do is they lure parents into the woods. And there's literally a trap. It's a rusty beer trap that they found. And so it clamps on one guy's leg. And they find him and then they release him. And that, you know, of course, he's mildly crippled. And so they bring him to a nearby cave. And they tie him up. And they leave him there. And then they say, we're going to find a mommy for you. And then they wait and they wait because most of the people wandering in the woods are men.
Yeah, I've found that to be true.
Because apparently where they set the bear trap is a popular cruising spot. So,
and you show that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we stay at PG-13, but you definitely know what's going on behind that bush.
So you know it's definitely, no one could miss it. You don't show it, but you definitely know that there are men servicing each other behind the bushes in the Parent Trap remake.
It's a cruising spot.
Jeepers creepers. Yeah. Okay.
So then they're waiting. So they all these men are getting captured and they like the guy that they caught. You know, they really want him to be the daddy. But meanwhile, he's developed a serious infection because the bear trap is old and rusty. So they're, you know, so it's kind of like there's a time limit. They need to hurry and match their daddy up with a new mommy. So eventually there's a woman walking through the woods. Well, why would a woman be walking through the woods? Well, she's trying to find her husband.
Oh,
right.
Right.
She suspected things for a long time. So she shows up to this cruising spot she read about in the Grindr newsletter and she's wandering the woods and smackaroony, she gets caught in the trap. And then the kids, they come, they find her, they unlock her and they tie her up and they bring her to the cave. And lo and behold, that's her husband in the cave. Whoa. Yeah. Now he's got 104 degree fever and sepsis, but she's a nurse. So she's able to nurse him back to health. And then they become the mommy and daddy for the two kids.
You know, it doesn't feel like Disney. I mean, I think Disney is going to have, is rethinking its business model right now. I think they're suffering during the quarantine. So maybe,
well,
but
I'll be honest. It's not Disney.
Oh,
so I made a mistake when I was typing in the domain name.
Okay.
And I typed in Dinsey, which led me to, I guess, a squatter site, unbeknownst to me.
Okay.
It was a squatter site mainly used for pornography.
Oh, no.
But I pitched them the movie and they agreed to foot the bill for it.
That's great. So you've actually sold, this is a sold screenplay.
Yes.
I don't think we've had one of those yet.
Nope. Not yet. I mean, the money hasn't changed hands, but I'm hopeful.
Wow, that's really great. So what, did they have any notes of things that they wanted to see changed in the movie?
They said they loved everything. They just need my bank details so that they can send me the money.
Well, that's great. You should do that right away.
I did.
Well, I'm sure you'll be hearing back soon.
I hope so. I'm eager to get started on this project.
I have no notes on that. That sounds like a really interesting, you know, the thing you hate to see in a remake is just sort of the same thing,
right?
Just with a different actor.
Yeah, I refuse to do that in any of my films. I've never done that.
Good for you.
Yeah.
I guess I can't wait to see that in theaters or on, you know, probably down the dark web.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
So another screenplay, and there's no way you have the rights to this, but, you know, I guess you'll work that out. You wrote the screenplay, Harry Potter and the Wandering Hands.
Yes.
Okay, that seems already, because I'm reading the Harry Potter books to my kids, and already that seems like a book that I might want to pass on as a parent. So what is that screenplay about?
Well, Harry Potter, he gets out of his school, Hogwarts.
Good. Uh-huh.
That's right, right? So he gets out of Hogwarts, and he's looking for a mentor.
Oh,
you know, he wants to be an apprentice magician somewhere.
Magician. Okay, and, good.
And so he finds this guy. His name is Fu Ling. He's a Chinese magician. He's got an act. Okay. And so he goes to him, says, I'm a wizard in training. I'd love to be an apprentice. And Fu Ling takes him on and they begin doing their traveling show. And they travel the United States in a Winnebago. And it's a small Winnebago because Fu Ling's not making that much money and he wants to save on gas.
So okay.
They're both forced to sleep in the back of the Winnebago.
Right.
And so, you know, Fu Ling says, this is my side, this is your side. But over the course of the trip, Harry starts to feel like Fu Ling has been moving more and more into his side.
Okay.
And then one night, Fu Ling says to Harry one night, I want to show you something very important to me. He takes out this box, this long box. He opens it up and he says, see this, this long thing, long and narrow. And Harry's like, yeah. And he says, this is my wand. And Harry says, oh, right. And then he puts it away. And then Fu Ling says, I showed you mine. Now show me yours.
Okay.
And then we don't really say what happens, but there's just lightning inside the back of the Winnebago.
Oh my gosh. Okay. What happens after, what's the next scene right after the lightning in the Winnebago?
Harry's dragging the body into the woods near a rest stop.
Oh God. Okay.
Yeah. Harry didn't want any of that business.
Finally, wanted to ask you, I don't know what your obsession is, man. Like, give it a rest. They're not even that popular anymore.
Oh my God.
But I mean, you just tell me about your screenplay, Alien versus Predator versus the Muppets.
Yep. I did that one. I wrote it.
You wrote that. This is you.
Alien versus Predator versus the Muppets. Shortly after I'd come down with COVID, I had a fever and I thought maybe I should write another Muppets movie. Alien versus Predator versus Muppets. So the movie is, it's about a space traveling hunter. It's this creature that flies from planets to planet, hunting and trophy gathering. It's an advanced life form. And then, the Predator is played Michael Jackson, and then the Muppets. And so you have this alien comes to Earth and there's a new show on Broadway with Michael Jackson and the Muppets. And he, the alien finds himself, you know, sitting in the rafters of this theater and jumps on the stage and rips out Michael Jackson's spine. And Jackson goes, hee hee, as his spine's being pulled out of his back. And of course, the Muppets react in horror and they all scatter.
Of course they do.
And then the rest of the movie is the Muppets trying to get revenge on the alien for killing Michael Jackson, their hero, their mentor, their sleepover friend.
And how does that go? How do the Muppets try to get revenge? How do they succeed or fail?
Well, the alien has advanced technology. So he can detect the heat patterns of the hands that are up the Muppets. And so, you know, you can see, you'll see like a cold, dead green velvet thing, but there's a hot, warm hand in it. And so the alien targets that.
Ooh.
So most of the people lose their arms in the movie.
And then most of the puppeteers.
Yeah. They lose their arms. And then you just see these empty puppets lying on the ground and they're, you know, they can't do anything anymore. There's no arm inside them. No, they're no threat to the alien at this point. So the alien goes back to his planet.
Wow. And then what happens? Are there any Muppet survivors? Any last minute hijinks?
No. Like all the Muppets are just lying there and the camera slowly pulls away. And you just see these Muppets and these severed arms and just hear. And then it just goes off into space.
Now, is that you knowing that you got to stop writing Muppet movies so you try to kill them all off?
It's what I really, I want to see happen in the franchise more than anything.
Okay, well, that's that.
All right, then. That was Questionable Material. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast. Make sure to review the podcast. Make sure to visit qmpodcast.com for episodes, show notes, and bonus material.